All right, so we're now ready for another social marketing hour. And here for you today, I have a great, great, great guest, somebody that I have been around for quite a while. He's actually been around me for several years now. And he has a very, very great business in Amazon. He has a great community that he teaches Amazon things to. They call him the Wizard of Amazon. And we're excited to have you here. Amazon is such an important platform in the world today, and it will be for a long time. And it's still growing every single day. And it's, I always like to describe Amazon as 50% of the pie. It's 50% of the pie. When you're not on Amazon as an e-commerce brand, you're missing out. And it's one of those things that I would say it's a mistake. So, Carlos, it's a pleasure to have you here with us today. I have been trying to make this connection for a long time. I'm happy to have you here in person at the AGM headquarters. Let's have a great podcast. Welcome to the show.
Man, thank you so much. You've been a top influencer of mine over the years, whether you know it or not. I've always admired your email marketing style, just your marketing brain. I think every time I've gone to traffic and conversion, as far back as I can remember, if I see you on the tracks there, it's like one of my top conferences. I'm like, well, I'm going to that one. I got to hear Manny talk. And thank you for having me here, rather, and it's a bucket list item for me, so.
I appreciate it. It's great to have you here. Carlos, do you speak Spanish? Are you?
Puedo defenderme.
Okay. All right. It's not your main language.
No.
Your first language is English.
Is English.
So you were raised in the U.S.?
I was born and raised in Miami.
Father
from Cuba. My mom's German.
Wow. From the Cuban roots. That's awesome. Okay. I did not know that about you. Okay. But your father and your parents did a great job of teaching you the language.
Absolutely. And now we're trying to do that at home, where my five-year-old son and my three-year-old daughter, we try to speak Spanish in the house. My wife was born in Cuba. So that's been something. I can talk in Spanish, but if I need to think quick in Spanish, sometimes I default to English. The goal is to hopefully they grow up and they know Spanish and English.
Of course, that's what I do. In my house, we don't speak English.
But then they go to school.
And that's right.
They learn English.
It happens, but I think something that I have four kids, and we've done a pretty good job of that, even though my wife and I mostly speak in English to each other.
Right.
That's just the way it is. Right. When it comes to the conversations with our kids, we try really hard to make them feel that we don't understand English. And that way, you know, you want to communicate to us, you got to talk in Spanish.
That's the marketing mind. You got to talk in Spanish. Like, how we make this work.
But now they're grateful. My 16-year-old is fluent in Spanish. He loves speaking the language, and he's proud of it. Hey, Carlos, 50 million Latin American people in this country. This country, the United States of America, has more Latin American people than the great majority of Latin American countries. And if you look at a company like us, we were able to give you a little walking tour of Natural Sem before we started. We're built on the Latin American community. We actually have, just in the USA alone, we haven't had enough time to figure out how to get to the Americans, English-speaking community. What's happening right now is that we are inevitably, because of the generation change, we're speaking more and more in English to people, but still in the Latin American families, that they now prefer to speak English because they're a next generation. And maybe they speak Spanish like you, but language is English for them.
Absolutely.
So we're seeing a lot of that, but our focus is, which is something that I've talked about it endlessly. If you just put attention on the Latin American market, it is such a powerful community for business.
We have a fairly large team, and we have a goal of early 2025 to have over 50% of our team actually from Latin America. Like, we're really bullish on Latin America. So I agree.
That's great. Carlos, tell me a little bit about your story, because I know you're an Amazon legend already. I know you, you got a great reputation. People like you, people appreciate being around you, and you're a powerhouse in that industry. How did you get started? Tell me a little bit about that process.
Completely accidental. I was a, and I've shared this a few times before, and now I'm looking at it as that's a really cool story, but at the time it wasn't feeling really cool when it was happening. So I'm an elementary school dropout. I came from a really difficult childhood, and I find myself selling cigars, working as a dairy clerk in Publix, and delivering subs. Plus, I have this expensive ex-girlfriend at the time, and I was constantly trying to figure out ways to just do these little hustles. At the time, it was, cleaning out grease chases in restaurants at night, and I eventually discovered eBay. So it wasn't too hard back then to sell on eBay and quickly replace a Publix salary, right? Publix supermarket.
Right. This is 2000 and...
This is, I'm going to say 2008.
Wow.
Early 2008. And I quickly replace what I would be making working in these other jobs. And my family's encouraging me to go full time into this. We're giving it a name now, e-commerce. Some people are throwing around marketing. Or he's an eBayer. And at the time,
eBayer.
Right. At the time, it's a lot of auctions for traffic. And then I'm trying to get the email addresses and the information from those people and do other stuff. But Amazon was reaching out to us at the time and they were just like, try this thing and try this FBA thing and all that was going on. So we're like, you know, it really didn't make sense at first. It was like, there's no way this is going to work. There's no way that I really want to increase my margins, but I'm somehow going to pay and send something into FBA and make more money. So I took a shot and I was just like, anything that I could not sell on eBay that was just taking up space in my house, I was like, I'm just going to send this into FBA. And there was no thought of optimization, images. I mean, most of the products didn't even have a main image. And they all sold. They all sold as soon as you got there. And I started getting those emails that really haven't changed much over the years, which is, congratulations, your item has sold.
Hmm.
And
that's some fun times when you get those emails for the first time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so family and friends see that I'm doing something productive. And it's like, wow, Carlos is doing something. He's working for himself. Entrepreneur, and let's support this. So they pulled together what comes out to be about $81,000, which more money I had seen in my life, more money than I thought I would ever see. I thought you could retire on $81,000 back.
Same
then,
here. Right. Same here.
At the time, I had really just discovered early days Alibaba too, around that time. So anybody listening to this now imagines like everything I'm about to say about Alibaba. Remember, this was 15 years ago. And I had,
which, by the way, is very early in the game.
Yeah.
Very early.
Very early.
Especially for Amazon. This is early stages of third-party selling.
I had discovered these, just for the sake of that we're being recorded, it was this adult novelty product, right? And I was getting them for like 16 cents and I was selling them for like 20 bucks. And I was like, when I got the $81,000, I'm like, I'm going to invest $81,000 in these things. And I contact my supplier, a guy named Elvis, a company named Pleasure Chest. They still exist to this day in China. And I was like, I want $81,000 of these things. And it was my first time hearing about lead time and things like that to get it made. Cause previously I would just order. They had a few lying around, they'd send them and I'd sell them. And I didn't understand lead time. I also didn't understand how many containers that would have been. And I just said, you're not taking me serious. You know, I'm going to be the next Bill Gates. Like, I'm going to find someone else. So I go on Alibaba and I find someone named Usman Cisse. And he's got all my products in stock, is ready to ship. So I send the money and he stole everything. He had a factory in Hong Kong.
The 81,000?
The 81,000. Well, it's by 79.80, but he stole it all. Well, I sent it. I don't even call it stealing. Like, I pretty much donated it to this person. There wasn't no factory in Hong Kong. A simple Google search would have like debunked this, an inspection, anything, a million things. I was like his dream mark, I guess, right? And weeks go by. And all I'm thinking is, to show how naive I was like, I hope nothing happened to his mom and dad. Like, something tragic must have happened for him not to be responding to me.
God.
And the last thing I thought was that, and I finally do a Google search and I realize, you know, this happens on Alibaba to people who don't know what they're doing.
Wow.
So
he received $80,000 of free money.
Yeah. Well, they wanted it back. And I'm sure at least half the people there had to know, if you give Carlos at that time that amount of money, that would be a very high risk investment. You know what I mean? Like, so some people had to know, like, I might not see this back. In my mind though, everyone was going to see every penny back and some. So when this happened, I just didn't want anyone to know. I didn't want people to stop saying entrepreneur and all these other terms that I felt like I could connect with. So I didn't tell anyone. And I started trying to sell off a few of the possessions I had. It was just like Movado watch that I had at the time that I loved. And they were
like, I have a couple of those.
Like, I thought I was going to get thousands. They were like $250. and then I went to go take in two snakes. I liked reptiles. My wife forbids them in the house now, but I went to go sell two snakes and I'm in pillowcases. And person in front of me was paying $50 for about 30 live worms. And this is, we're going to tie this into like where things really start blowing up for me, and I thought, I'll dig for worms all day and sell worms for that amount of money. I'm a hard worker. Shovels are cheap. I can make this happen. I can get my seed capital back and I can do this. So I go into a public library and I find an article by a zoologist saying that zoos could save a lot of money breeding insects and feeding their reptiles instead of paying top dollar on the private market. So I was like, breed insects? Like, how difficult could that be? It's actually quite difficult, but I'm like, how difficult could that be? Fast forward 8 months, my ex leaves me because at this point we have about 3 million Jamaican crickets, 3 million roaches, 3 million feeder worms and super worms in our house. In these Tupperware habitat, you know, these not Tupperware, like container box store, like habitats that I've, you know, glued together literally. And I get a knock on the door in the middle of the night from code enforcement. And I don't, wherever somebody's listening to this in Miami, if code enforcement works after 5 p.m., if they're still on shift, something went really
wrong. Something is really wrong.
Really, really wrong. Cause they just, that's kind of like safe to do things after that time.
Yeah. It's a government agency. Government,
right. Middle of the night, they're knocking. So I have 3 million crickets going off in a residential neighborhood at one time. So it's deafening. And they tell me I need to throw them out. I bluff them and say it would be an agricultural disaster if I did. And they bought it, gave me until the next day. I get a buddy to let me get half the warehouse to move into. I wind up getting the whole thing because no one wants to split their warehouse with insects. And saving a lot of the gory details, but fast forward another year and I exited that business for $2.6 million. I was selling
of
hundreds
growing
of boxes
insects.
Of live insects, FBM, obviously, but on eBay and Amazon. And I was selling hundreds of these per day at like $65, $70
wow. a box. And it was different types of insects?
Feeder worms, super worms at the time, a lot of Jamaican crickets. We call them Dubai roaches, but they're not really Dubai roaches. And selling them to, at the time, which was just insect owners. I'm sleeping, you know, efficiency, VAs, hiring, SOP, all these things that I'm sure like you and I probably live and breathe talking about. I didn't know any of that back then. So this was me with a pitcher, scooping, measuring, packing, taping. I figured I could ship, you know, 60 more boxes if I didn't drive home. So I'm living in this freaking warehouse. Hindsight, it was a bad deal. I could have got a lot more. I didn't know about EBITDA. I didn't know any of this stuff. As a matter of fact, I had horrible credit at the time, which actually had a big impact on the sale. But I exited. It was the best thing that could have happened to me at that time. I immediately did what anyone else would do in that situation, which is I had no financial skills. I had no anything. And I almost blew all the money partying around Miami. And my father just said, you know, I forget how the conversation came up, but he was like, hey, look, if you keep doing this, you're going to be broke by this time next year. Because you're 2.6, but the government takes a massive cut.
Oh, yeah.
The people involved, everyone there, they got their hands in it. So you're not left with like a lot of, you're left with a lot of money, but you're not left with 2.6.
And that's right.
Near 2.6. Plus debt, plus getting out of your lease and all that stuff. So I could have been broke in a year and I decided I did not ever want to do that again. I wanted to, if I want the ribeye, just buy the ribeye. Like I didn't want to think about that anymore. So I started what I guess is called now an Amazon wholesale business, which was just reselling and private label. And I was like, I'm going to get into beverage chilling devices. So think like corksicle like stuff. And I was like, at the time it was, I was one of the first ones to get into whiskey stones. Now they're everywhere. But these whiskey stones, we'd get them for like $1.80 and we'd sell them at the time for like $35, right? And they flew. And I just haven't looked back. Since then, we've exited 17 businesses we started on Amazon. We meaning business partners. I didn't have the confidence to start a lot of these by myself.
Right.
My team. And I've branched into other stuff like Latin Dance Studios. Here with one of my business partners, Andres Fernandez, we started Salsa Kings, which is one of the biggest Latin dance studios in the U.S., little arepa restaurants, car washes, dog grooming stuff. Cause I just didn't know 15 years ago that Amazon, that I'd be sitting in this amazing compound that you have thinking that Amazon's still a thing. So I wanted to have these backup things so I wouldn't be broke again. And that's it. Like, I think those are some of the big points as
highlights
to how I got started. And since then I've just sold. I've just started brands. I love branding. I love email. I love that everyone's starting to realize email is not dead. I absolutely love it. I love community. And I've tried to do that with all my brands. Obviously, insects, I didn't have a community. My non-compete ended with that insect brand, by the way, and I started it again. And now it's the only brand I have. We'll do approximately, we'll push 90 million in sales with just live insects. We do a lot of now the B2B side of things, selling to poultry farms and stuff like that. But exited three of my other brands beginning of last year. And now go figure. Like, here we are. And my biggest brand is all I do is I'm the live insect guy.
That's incredible. And what is the name of that brand?
Miami Reptile.
Mind Your Reptile.
Miami Reptile.
Wow. That is so cool. I love that. And well, once you figure it out, something that works, right? Why surrender it? Especially if you went past that point of non-compete already and you can go and do it all over again. That's brilliant. I love it. There's one thing that obviously stands out, that just to give people value in regards to Carlos's journey, like, it's inevitable. Hard work eventually will run into luck.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. You work hard and you will eventually get lucky.
Increase your surface area.
That's right. You were working hard. Like you said, you were willing to shovel and, you know, oh, you saw that 50 worms, like, 30 worms, $50, something like that. And that makes sense. Oh, I can just shovel for worms and let me just work hard and I'll do it. And you eventually run into it. That's the way it is. There's a quote that I use a lot, which is a Seneca quote about luck. It's what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Other people say that you will eventually get lucky if you work hard. Whatever that is, it's inevitable. It's an inevitable truth that you cannot escape.
Amen to that.
And you have obviously kept on looking for opportunities, which the other thing is that the world is constantly changing and opportunities present themselves. We were talking about artificial intelligence before our podcast.
You blew my mind.
It's an opportunity. It's one of those opportunities that are present in this particular world. So people either sit on the sidelines while other people leverage it, or they jump all over it. It's as simple as that. I mean, success in the game of entrepreneurship is as simple as playing the game. You got to play in the game. And some of them are playing the game better than other ones. Some of them accumulate more relationships than others, and that helps them open up bigger doors. But at the end of the day, it's just about playing. And that's really cool. You saw an opportunity with eBay, you jumped all over that replaced your income. You saw the Amazon opportunity, you started third party selling, and you became one of the first ones probably to do this. And then that led towards you being here today. So Carlos, now fast forward to 2023, we're recording this podcast. Where does Amazon stand? What's happening with Amazon? What are you telling your audience? What are you telling the people that you get to connect with?
I'm having an easier time now saying the things that I've been saying for years that have kind of been ignored. You touched on relationships a second ago. Relationships are everything. Relationships with your customer, relationships with your team. If you're not invest, I don't care if you do resale. If you're still a reseller, if someone's a reseller, just going to the store and just flipping stuff and going to a brand and reselling their stuff, your relationship with them matters. That's where my greatest ROI is in relationships. But I personally don't, and you doesn't have to do this. You don't have to do this to succeed, but I just don't want any part of a business and a brand that A, doesn't allow me to create meaningful, impactful content around that brand so that I can engage via email, so that I have stuff on social, that I can help people understand my brand better and just live a better, more empowered life. And I don't want to be part of any brand that wouldn't allow for community. Those are just two things I'm super passionate about. And I think more brands that think that way are going to have a much easier time.
So that goes in line with my philosophy that you know really well. Right, like absolutely. Things that I talk about.
Well, a lot of my philosophy has been molded by stuff that you've put out there. Like me, you put out a lot of great content. So I'm sitting here like, I can't put this in words. And then I'll read something you have over the years and I'll be like, well, I no longer need 10 minutes to describe that. Here it is in one sentence. So yeah, a lot of things I am saying have definitely been influenced by you and other great people in the space. So for sure.
Good. I appreciate that. So just to emphasize on what you just said right now, which is it's really powerful. And you know, aligns with the way that I operate in the game of business. The days of like going to Alibaba and getting some coasters that have no potential value to provide to the world and just trying to become rich, not there anymore, right? Like, especially when it comes to brand building and starting a brand from scratch, this is very important. You want to get into something that allows you to create an impact beyond that particular product.
Absolutely.
That has content, that has information, that has value, that you can build communities, that you can keep on creating content and educating and inspiring and entertaining and whatever that is. No matter what that is, you want to keep on creating content around that particular model. Whatever that may be is how you want to build a brand these days. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So, because I remember going back in the day, 2014, when I started building my first brand, I built a brand called COSY Collection, COSY, Betsy's brand. I still created content in the social media game, but it was a very different era. It was an era in which all I had to do was create sexy listings with great bullet points and great images and great titles and just drive traffic to it and manipulate the search results, and off we go to the races. Those days are over, would you say?
They're definitely really far back in the rearview mirror. I guess there could be an exception to anything, but no. I'm going to say, yeah, like just getting up there and creating something sexy on Canva and posting it there or some Confucius quote, I think those days are past, yeah.
Okay, so it's important. So if somebody wants to start from scratch right now, because we live in a world that every year has more people, Amazon is still growing. The opportunity is still there. E-commerce is eventually going to stop being E and it's going to just be commerce. That's the way it is. It's growing. Retail has kept on declining while e-commerce is keep on going up. So the opportunity is still there. In this world that we have in front of us, how does somebody start on Amazon now?
We're going to say you're building a brand, which is where you want to be if you're going to build a brand on Amazon. And that can mean a lot of different things for different people. But something actionable that I would say is do not sell a Me Too product. Just unless... I would consider selling a Me Too product if I had 800,000 people on a YouTube channel that followed me or a rabid email list. And I'd be like, you know what? My list, I have this list on people, let's just say, that love whiskey, right? They just absolutely love whiskey. You know what? Let's get a coaster. I got my own list of people that I'm going to launch. We're going to be the top of page one on this thing. And then from there, it's a totally different story. But if I'm going to get this coaster and I'm going to try to rank this coaster that looks like almost every other coaster on Amazon with rising PPC costs.
Not happening.
And Chinese factories that are willing to play the dirty review game and make a penny. I don't want to play that game.
So the Me Too product, like the classic like garlic press or the classic like, you know, spatula, kitchen spatula, something that doesn't stand out. Because
I don't want to do that. So I need to be able to differentiate the product. And now I think that's where a lot of people just get lost. And they're like, I don't want to invest the money unless I can validate that it's already selling. And there's so many tools and there's so many just smart people that can help with that valid. Nothing's guaranteed that can help with that validation process. And you want to do it. It's actually more profitable to differentiate. Like, for example, the easiest one, let's pull a mold for the product and let's change the way this thing looks. Like maybe we're going to get this coaster and it's going to be a Ninja Star coaster, right? And at a minimum, you lose some people because they're like, yeah, but to get a Ninja Star coaster, let's say it's a wood product. It's like, I got to spend $2,500 on a mold. The thing is, though, by you having a Ninja Star coaster, you're also going to be able to sell that thing for $5-$6 more per sale. So you can starve everyone out on ads. You can actually be profitable on ads. You're going to get that Restorf effect where you stand out on, you know, the case study with Angry Orange. That's a pretty popular one. You're going to be that Angry Orange on the page where people see you and you get that attention. Well, attention grabbing media. I'm preaching to the choir here, but like you're going to get their attention. You're going to grab it and your chances of converting not only are better, but more profitable on Amazon. That's my take on it.
Makes sense.
So there's a lot of different ways you can differentiate, but if you're going to start, in my opinion, I mean, unless you're getting into a product that like it's chips, even then I would say go for the turmeric pepper rather than the plain Ruffles, you know, but like just differentiate. And it's not that complicated after that.
Something that really helps you stand out.
Yeah.
Be different.
That's my take. I don't know where your stance is on that, but that's mine.
No, 100%. And I think that just to go back to the thing that you said earlier, Carlos, which is unless you have a built-in audience,
yes,
then at that point you can take any product. I can take this particular sparkling water, put my stamp on it and say, I approve, and put my own brand on it and sell it because I'm approving of it. And that works too. You can make money with that. You can take products that you believe in and you can brand them and you can leverage the fact that you have attention. And that is a path that works. My father had a way of operating, which was very unique. He never wanted to create something that was not special, that was not unique, that was not different. I remember we have a great brand. We have somewhere around 35 different products that we built over the years. One of the things that we struggled with my father when he was still with us is trying to get him to approve us selling just a simple matcha tea. Matcha tea. How much special can you make it? It is matcha. It is the same thing, the same ingredients. You can't really do much more with it. You cannot add paprika to it. It's going to ruin it. Nobody wants to drink matcha with paprika. They want to drink matcha tea. So we had a very tough time convincing him. And I'm never going to forget that because he did not want to do it because he didn't feel that it was special. And the way that I convinced him was, Dad, listen, I understand how you operate. I know that you want to sell special things. You want to make your own formulas. You want to add your own ingredients. You want to connect things the way that you want to connect them. But this one, you talk about matcha all the time, about the benefits of matcha. You have videos about this. You got a very large following. This is how I convince him. Dad, why don't you just go ahead and put a stamp on one of them, say the Natural Slim Matcha Tea. We're going to call it Metabolic Matcha, true story. And we're going to sell it to your audience. And it's not saying that it's special. It's just saying that it has your stamp of approval. But that way, we can sell to our customers one that we already approved. Instead of them buying trash that could potentially be low quality, we're giving one a stamp. And this is, and he's like, he thought about it. And he's like, okay, that makes sense. We can protect our audience. We can stop them from buying stuff that is trash. Okay, Dad, there you go. You got it. We're going to sell it. And then we created a great product and that sells to our audiences. But if it wasn't for that viewpoint, my father was a romantic. He was a total romantic about delivering something unique and high quality to people and different and something that stands out. And he would not compromise. No amount of money would make him be like, okay, I'm just going to launch that product. It was always like a product of creating a formula that was unique for it. Now, that being said, Carlos, you know, we have this whole thing going on right now in which we're helping people build their own brands, print on demand supplements, skincare, et cetera, which you don't get a chance to customize those formulas. Somebody else is customizing them for you. And here's the thing. You got to start somewhere. That's the key. If you're an entrepreneur and you're going to get going and you don't have enough resources to create your own custom stuff, then you got to start somewhere. And as you become successful with marketing strategies, with my education, with Carlos' education, whatever that is, as you become successful, you can work on customizing your stuff and making it special. But you got to start somewhere.
100%.
This is the way it is, right? Like at some point, it's better to do something than not do anything at all, especially if you feel you have the potential to build brands and businesses and just do something special. You got to look for opportunities. What are those things that are presenting themselves that you can jump on board, take advantage of them, and just get the path going, get the journey started, right?
Some of those things for me, and it would be the main one, I come from a point where almost all my brands were that I've started. Most of them came from, even the ones years later after a bunch of exits. I think there's a misconception that, you know, you get this exit, you hear this number, and that just means sitting in your bank account is that much liquid. You know, a lot of these things had a lot of debt to build. So you have to pay that debt back and you're starting another business and you're reinvesting and growing. So almost none of my brands started from this huge surplus of cash and investors and everything like that. So there was always this like, hey, if I can't make this work, all my brands were started with this smaller budget. If I can't make it work with a smaller budget, maybe that means it can't work. And I don't think that's true, but that's just where I came from. So for me, it was that. And like what I mentioned is content and community. So an opportunity right now, if you're not ready to do it, but you do need to set things in motion. For me, that is community. Like I started and sold a scuba accessories brand by creating 6 meetup groups throughout the US and building a community there and partnering with like scuba stores so that they could do free scuba suit certifications. Like my abs are not beach ready. I couldn't be out there in a wetsuit. So like I did
scuba
that.
Accessories.
Scuba accessories, yeah. Nice. Snorkels and masks and all this other stuff. And this is an industry where people are very brand loyal. You know, like you're not just gonna get anything. This is also an industry where people spend money. Like there's money. It's not a cheap thing to go do. So I did that. And oh, nice. Nice. So
I gotta buy some of your scuba stuff. You didn't open that network, man. I'm a nitrox diver too.
That's amazing. Well, here's another thing. I'm not even scuba certified to this day. So
you don't have to do something in order to build a business around it. All right.
Sure.
That's a good lesson right there.
Building the community was huge. So right now that I find the easiest way forward. I don't think you should be 100% reliant on it, but the easiest way forward is email has never died, but the opportunities surrounding email, like, I don't know if you've heard about Spark Loop. Mm-hmm. The opportunity around email now, it's almost become like one to many, like community in it with being able to engage with your audience at a much higher, in a much more intimate way. And
what is SparkLoop?
SparkLoop is something, I think it was recently purchased by ConvertKit. I don't use ConvertKit. I used them a long time ago and I liked them. But they, what it allows you to do is, like, let's say, you connected SparkLoop to your email service provider. I use HubSpot, but I could connect, it connects to any of them. And what happens is when someone joins my email list, a pop-up will come up immediately thereafter and say, well, if you really like my email list, or say I'm joining yours, it'll say, you should check out the Wizards of Ecom one, and you can connect other ones. It's not like if I read your book, Marketing Magic, I'm not going to read any other book ever, right? I'm going to read other books. I'm a reader.
Totally.
So if I'm going to read an email list, I'm probably going to want to read some other emails. So it recommends other emails for people to join. And I find that most people using that are growing their email lists so much faster than they normally were. Another thing that—
So it's a network of like people that have content and value sharing these prospects with each other.
Absolutely. Another one is, instead of somebody giving their money to— nothing against Zuckerberg, I like him, but instead of giving your money to Zuck, you can say, well, you know what? My avatar, they're on Manny's list, right? I'm trying to get them through social media and I'm paying a lot for ads, but my cost per acquisition that I'd love to get people on my email list on is X. I can go to you, and we don't overlap or anything like that. We're not competitors. And I can go to you and be like, look, you want to connect our stuff through SparkLoop? I don't see your list, so you're maintaining privacy. You don't see mine, but we see, let's eliminate everyone that we both have. And then this email will go out to them that you approve of. And anyone that joins that way, I'll pay you what I'm happy paying in my cost per acquisition. So like, say it was $2.75. So imagine I get 1,000 leads from your list. It automatically pays you 1,000 times $2.75. So it's a way for you to monetize what you have. So I think those are really good opportunities in the email space right now.
So it's just connect the SparkLoop system.
Yeah.
And SparkLoop gives a report to both sides. And it says, well, these people that came in to purchase your book were invited to join the Wizards of Amazon list, and 10% of them opted in, and that's 158 people, and here you go.
Here's— yeah, absolutely. So you get into a SparkLoop network, and one of the hard things was, yeah, I'll build a community with email, but I'm only going to have 3 people on there. You know, 2 of them is my mom and dad. You connect through SparkLoop, and within weeks, you'd have thousands of people on your email list that are actually relevant to your email list. So that ability to jumpstart that way, or that ability to like collaborate with other people that are already doing it, I think is huge. So it's a great place to start.
That's great.
Yeah. So you want to test your content. So I community and content. So now that I have people on the list and I test my content and it's working, it's like, this is good. You know, people are really into this supplement that I'm talking about, or my way of doing exercise. Now I would move forward with the supplement. It's kind of like my thing. I was like, yeah, I got a bunch of people. I can sell to them now.
That's great. And I would imagine that something like SparkLoop is, it's, you have to give equally, right? Like I don't go in there and I just take people's prospects.
Correct.
Right. I would have to also, correct, you know, present an opportunity, and it has to be like somehow collaboration of power.
Absolutely. You can pick them. You can't have like open yourself up and like 10 people are just, you know, trying to cannibalize your list and they're not giving back. No, you're going to pick people and be like, hey, look, this makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Brilliant model. I think it's a great way to give each other value. There's a big world out there. There's a massive pie that we should all be sharing and providing value to each other, for sure. It's fantastic. Carlos, so what are you up to these days yourself? What are your groups, and how can people connect with you, and what are you up to in regards to education on the opportunities? Are you still very centered on Amazon and showing people about the Amazon opportunity, or tell us a little bit about that?
I'm still very bullish on Amazon. I'd say I'm definitely a lot more open to omnichannel than I've ever been. Majority of my time right now, like my businesses are on cruise control. Like I have great operators in place. I have, you know, I have over 50 businesses at this point, and it's like 242 virtual assistants, 81 domestic employees. So like, and they're great people too. I just got a tour of your place. We went in the warehouse and I was telling you, man, it's been a bit since I've been in a warehouse smelling these boxes. It's bringing back some memories. So I'm focusing more on like visionary type stuff. Like what's the big relationship I need to make to move the needle? What's coming down the pipeline? What disruptor should we be looking at? I'm spending a lot of time doing that, and I'm enjoying it. That's always really been my strong suit. So besides that is the Wizards of Econ community, which started as Wizards of Amazon. We, you know, during COVID, we used to, pre-COVID, we used to meet in one of our dance studios on Saturdays. And post-COVID, during COVID, I needed to move the dance studios out of their location to save on rent. And I was like, let me just take over these locations and call them Wizards of Ecom, and we'll have a spot for our meetups and for other people to meet. So I'm spending a lot of time doing that, and I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot from other people. I'm learning by teaching. And we have close to 20 events now with, you know, Miami, Tampa, Orlando soon, LA, San Diego, Orange County. And it takes a lot of time to do that. So that's where the majority of my time is being spent right now, is to growing that Wizards of Ecom community, trying to add tracks like Shopify, YouTube, very bullish on YouTube, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like building a YouTube channel and building a reputation there, or what are you bullish about?
Very bullish about exactly that, like starting a YouTube channel, being able to teach on YouTube different things that I like, but in an entertaining way, not so much just talking head, and trying to do things different. Like, I don't want to get up there and say, this is the Amazon transparency program and you should do, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I'd rather do something like totally different. Like, we hired five different people to create this packaging design, one at $50, $100, $300, $1,000. Let's guess which one it is without seeing the price. I feel like there's an entertainment factor right to that. I'd really like to do content like that. Yeah.
That's amazing. Carlos, rapid fire. What are five pieces of advice, golden nuggets that you can give somebody that has an Amazon brand and they want to get more attention on it and they want to grow? Tell me about it.
Well, we mentioned one, which would be differentiate. A second one right now, I think it's a hotspot, is a technological differentiation, which is, you know, bringing in an app, showing an app on your main image. Even if you don't have like a wearable or technology product, as long as you're not like bifurcating the deliverable, you can have an app showing there. And we've run a lot of tests to show that showing that app in the main image, even if that's your warranty page and everything else, that showing that allows you to sell the product for like $5+ more. Like, even if you're looking at two sets of yoga blocks and one of them has that app sitting there, and on the yoga block, in the app for that one, it just has a month of free yoga block usage. Wow. I don't know, but like that's a big one. That just to really boost up your profits, that would be two. So it's five on Amazon.
So the first one is differentiating. You want to make sure that you study the competitors, find out what they're not doing, and just create your own elements that are going to make it stand out. The second one is obviously differentiating too, which is creating an app,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Something like that, that just gives people additional access, additional information, whatever that may be, because an app could be very simple to make these days. Yeah. FAQs, videos, information about your products, et cetera, how to get the most out of it, and so on. The third thing you said was, you mentioned, remind me the third one. You said,
I haven't said that. I think the third one would be building community.
Building community. Okay.
I think you should, I think someone should do it. And I'm going to go so far as to say I think everyone should treat their company as a media company, like at least to some degree. I don't think someone should launch something and be 100% slave to Amazon PPC's rising costs. Like, I can't imagine that long-term that's going to be a great play.
100%.
You have these bigger brands. There's been people for way too many years, these PL sellers that have just said, I'm crushing Coleman lanterns. And that's because I crushed their whole marketing team. It's like, no, they didn't want to be on Amazon. And now they're looking. Now they're going to bring their God knows how large budget, and they're going to start focusing it on Amazon. And they don't even care to profit on some of those products that are everything to you. So if you're not treating this as a media company and you're able to like sell off of this or be able to acquire customers on Amazon with like Amazon attribution in a way that makes sense, I think your days are numbered.
100%.
Yeah.
And the world has given you an opportunity for you to become a media company. There's a thing called artificial intelligence that allows you to create content at scale for social media platforms, for like blog writings, for script creation, for everything, for email marketing, for sequences, everything.
Yeah.
Something that I've been obsessed over. The subject of building a community is something that I've put a lot of attention on in this book. A lot of people in the e-commerce space, they focus on this thing called ROI, return on investment. And a lot of these people are very proud of it. They say, I got a 1-3 ROI. I put a dollar, I get $3 back. I get a $1 to 25 return, right? Because I built community. The reason why we are who we are a company that does 9 digits a year internationally, very high 8 figures a year on the supplement space in the Latin American community in the United States, is because we have community. We are not who we are without that community. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, emails, text messaging, social media platforms and Facebook groups and all across everything that we have. Any opportunity that the world has given me to push a few buttons and send a message out, that's how we do it. So that's 100% like, that's just the way you win in this game. A lot of people will tell you, oh, but I'm not a content person. I don't like being on cameras. I don't like this. It doesn't matter. You can either inspire, entertain, educate by video, by written form, by images. It doesn't matter what you do, but it's the content game that wins and people are consuming content. 99.9% of the population is consuming it. 0.1% of them is creating it. Even though it feels like it's crowded, it's really not crowded because most people don't have the courage to put themselves out there and create. It's just the way it is. So you do number three, like Carlos just said right now, and you're inevitably going to win. Some of those people are going to win faster because they're really good at the game of content creation. But no matter what, if you don't give up, you will win. All right. So that's gold right there. Carlos, you got two more?
Well, it was community number three, treat yourself as a media company number four. My fifth one was is build a team.
Treat yourself as a media company number four, all right? Content creation, all right? Content creation, be recording, content documenting nonstop, always do this consistently, right? And then number five?
Number five is build a team. I could not do what I've done. Just no way without, first of all, an amazing, I'd be remiss not to mention this, an amazing wife by my side and family. That when you come back with that imposter syndrome and you're doubting and you're stressed, is still there for you. Like, couldn't have done it without her. And just a rock star team. I know it sounds cliche, but hire people that are smarter than you. Hire people that are already in motion that you don't have to set in motion and that you could just direct where you need to direct. But if you got to set them in motion, I don't want you on a team. Like, if I got to motivate you every day to get rolling, like, that's not going to work. But hiring the right people and firing the wrong ones, are you just can't do it without it. So that would have to be number five.
I love it. Team building, 100% with it. In agreement. Probably the best thing I ever did in my life was to start building a team. Great stuff, Carlos. How can people connect with you if they want to keep on learning about the Amazon world, about what you're up to? How can people make that connection with you?
Anywhere on social media at Wizards of Ecom. We have a free chats on Telegram. There's no upsells or anything like that, but you go to wizardsofecom.com/chat. And I put this number out here, even though nobody uses it, but it's my number. It's 305-902-1283. Text me. Otherwise, if you just call me blindly, I won't pick up. But text me and we'll probably jump on a call.
That's awesome. Say that again. Number?
305-902-1283.
Love it. Carlos, thank you for showing up in the Social Marketing Hour. It has been a pleasure to have you here. And we're gonna have to do some things together, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, man.
All right. See you in the next one. See you later, guys.